Now, what are the various tools which are required to deliver quality medical care? One is one should have the right kind of protocols, which are basically standard operating procedures, which tell us how we are going to address any issue that is coming up in the hospital. The patient coming to you for a particular problem. If he comes for fever treatment, where he goes, if he is coming to casualty, he is going to come to the reception first. The receptionist is supposed to guide him. There should be proper signage is available. The protocol should be followed for each and every aspect. If it is fever in America, the patient is not directly seen by the doctor. There is a protocol laid down that he is supposed to go to casualty where blood will be collected, urine will be collected, maybe x-ray will be taken, then only his temperature will be measured, then only they are going to call the doctor. So when you have got such protocols whereby there is no going to be changes occurring with the different doctors coming and all that also, there is a standard operating procedure for everything. And usually the things will go right because that has been developed by experts in that field over a period of number of years of experience and over a research done and over a lot of efforts being put in while preparing these protocols. So once you are having the right kind of protocols, the right kind of standard operating procedures for each and every aspect of patient treatment care, usually your quality is going to be maintained well. Then comes evidence-based medicine. That means you are going to use only that medicine which has proved over the number of years that it definitely helps in treating this kind of disease. So it has to be evidence-based medicine and not just because one patient was cured by this kind of medicine, it may not have helped 88 people. But just because one patient was cured, it doesn't mean that this is the right medicine to be used. It is not by word of mouth that he appreciates one thing because he has been treated by this doctor or for some or the other reason there was a placebo effect and he became all right. So it has to be based on randomized clinical trials with control group and experimental group. And at times it is double blind studies that you are doing, and then also you are systematically reviewing these things, and finally when it is approved by the authoritative bodies, then only you are going to use that. So that's an evidence based medicine. When you use, definitely the quality of your care is bound to be perfect. Treatment guidelines should be given by the panel of experts. It is not that somebody who is a junior person who has treated 2-3 people and he says, yes, this treatment works and now we should use this. It has to be given by experts in that field and over a period of years of experience and the quality education that he has taken, he is going to suggest, then only you can have that kind of treatment guidelines. Rapid health delivery. There is a question mark today many times by the patients. They have got accident on the road. For 1 hour there is nobody available there to take care of him. A golden hour is lost and at times he dies. So it is the rapid health delivery which is very important. Unless the patient is reached at the right time, the treatment started at the earliest and all the required equipments ready, along with the paramedical team and the doctor available there, then only you can treat the patient at the earliest, and then only he can survive, and then only complications can reduce and the morbidity also will reduce. In America, once they have got a certain standard procedures, you have to just call one number, a police will come, ambulance will come within 3 minutes. If required, the patient may be airlifted also by helicopter to the right hospital. This is how it should be done. They have got a separate roads for the travel of the ambulances also. So, if you have got that kind of rapid health delivery, the golden hour that is there, which is the right treatment given within a very short time, which is very essential for prevention of mortality and morbidity. So, door to needle time for thrombolysis in case of myocardial infarction. Door of the patient where he resides to the moment the needle is inserted in his vein to give him thrombolysis treatment in case of myocardial infarction, so that that anticoagulant goes in his blood, which prevents further damage to the heart. How soon it is done? If you measure that, say if it is within 10 minutes, within 5 minutes, then yes, it is going to help the patient to a large extent. Then comes time taken to start medicines in cerebral malaria. Usually falciparum malaria may lead to cerebral malaria, and there you need quick treatment to be given. So, the time taken to start this treatment, start antibiotics in sepsis. When there is septicemia, you have to start IV antibiotics very soon, otherwise sometimes the patient may die of sepsis. So, these are the parameters to be taken care of, which gives us the idea whether the quality care is given or not. It is not that only the right equipments are available, the structure is proper, the rightly qualified doctors and nurses are available in the hospital, but even the time taken by the doctor to give the treatment also is equally important. So, these are some of the tools which are used to give the quality medical care. Now, let us understand what we mean by medical audit. Audit is a common term you may have learnt in finance. People are auditing the accounts of the companies. Public limited company are supposed to show their accounts to the qualified auditor, a chartered accountant, who should have randomly seen all the accounts, their asset liability, their profit and loss accounts and all, and who should certify that sufficient care has been taken and he is satisfied with it, which should be told to all the shareholders at the time of AGM, and this should be circulated to them 21 days in advance with the signature of the chartered accountant, the auditor. This we know. Similarly, in case of hospitals and health centers, one should have medical audit done, which tells us the quality of the care that is given to the patients. For medical audits, it is a requirement that you should have all proper medical records maintained. All clinico-pathological conferences are held to discuss various kinds of patients who have become all right or who have not become all right, the treatment given to them, the provisional diagnosis and final diagnosis, and whether the clinical judgment that was there, is it matching with the pathological reports or not, and even in case of deaths, you can have the clinico-pathological correlations post-mortem also by studying the post-mortem reports and then what were the symptoms and what was the diagnosis. So, you can compare the post-mortem diagnosis of the death also. There should be high standards kept, high benchmark kept for all the services that you are given. The purpose of medical audit is it helps the patients and the potential patients by improving the quality of care. By doing this kind of study and explaining it and making other doctors aware about this disease, the treatment given and the final outcome and all, they can become more aware about the earliest symptoms, the right kind of clinical investigations, the pathological investigations to be done, the likelihood of these results, and then correlation with the autopsy also in case the patient has died, and whether they were matching or not. In case they were not matching, what was the lacuna, what was the mistake that was done by the doctor in not recognizing some of these things, and then extrapolating it to the new patient who is going to come to him, and then learning out of it and then implementing this so that the new patient will be treated at earlier stage with prompt diagnosis and right treatment. So it helps the patients right now by discussing with various experts, as well as it helps the potential patient who is going to come in future also by improving overall the quality of care. It assesses competence of medical staff. By doing medical audit, you can find out whether your medical staff is competent in arriving at the right diagnosis, giving the right treatment, finding out the complications that are occurring at the earlier stage and correcting them or not. And it serves as an impetus to keep up to date, and it prevents mistakes as far as possible. It gives an impetus, it gives the person to update their knowledge at the earliest, so that they can learn about the newer methods, the latest technologies, the newer symptoms that are occurring, the side effects that are occurring of the drugs also to the earliest. It brings to notice deficiencies in hospital care. When you do audit, it brings to notice if there are any deficiencies in the hospital care, and in correcting these causative factors, we can do root cause analysis, fishbone diagram that we have learned in our management, which helps us in finding out where we can attack this and finally prevent this occurring in future. As a regulatory function also, it helps because there are statutory requirements, and then when you do audit, you are going to correct all those things so that you are not caught by the statutory authorities doing something wrong. It restricts undesirable procedures also. Some of the procedures are done by doctors which may not be required to be done, which can be found out by such introspection. Lay down standards for future care. You can modify your standard operating procedures, have the right kind of standards, and also you can improve upon them gradually by doing future audits also. Now, this is the clinical audit cycle. You have got certain guidelines in front of you, you have got certain evidence. What are we trying to achieve? You should know first. You have got outcomes of the previous patients, you have got some sampling, and then find out whether we are achieving what we are trying to achieve or not. You collect the data, find out what were your standards and what is actually you are getting, what is the difference, and if we are not achieving, find out why we are not achieving. By doing data analysis and designing the right kind of questionnaires, then you do the excitation and change your methods, change your management if required, so that you can improve upon it. Now, doing something to make things better. Are we doing something so that the future things will be better? It will be better quality management that we are doing. Find out what process we have been using. Is there any lacuna? And then redesign that process. Then, whether there is a continuous quality improvement that we are looking at, which is an important aspect in ISO also. And then, whether we are benchmarking each and every quality service that we are giving, and let us benchmark it to the best of the hospitals in India, to the best of the hospitals in the world, so that we can improve upon from where we are. Have we made things better? Then find out, have we really made things better? By monitoring what we are doing, by benchmarking again, by doing process redesign, and finally, whether the patient and the public involvement also, one has to take the feedback from your patients, from public, get the you can send the questionnaire to them and get the feedback from them, or let there be suggestion boxes where they can write for improvement and find out if there are any medical legal cases against you also, whether there was any material in that. So, try to learn from all the angles and improve upon. So, there are stages of this audit. Stage 1 is you should have preparation for the audit. You should know that this is the audit that is coming. So, first find out your structure, whether all these checklists you should have, that you are having all these requirements to be fulfilled, whether you are having the right kind of equipments needed, whether you are having the right kind of infrastructure, whether you are having the proper signages, your housekeeping is proper or not, whether your annual maintenance contract is being done regularly as per the quarterly or once in 4 months, whether all the records are ready, whether calibration of the equipments is done or not. Stage 2, you select criterias. What all things you want to have, what are things required for this. So, you select criteria for this based on your benchmarking. Stage 3, you measure your performance, whether as per the benchmarks are you performing or not. By using the right methods and creating the right kind of environment, by training people, by motivating them. And stage 4, you make improvements, because now you know your benchmarks, now you know your actual performance. So, now you know the difference, and to take care of that difference, whatever are the lacunas, you make the improvements in that. And in stage 5, you have to sustain this improvement and continuously go on improving your procedures, processes. So, your structure, process, outcome, all these parameters give you the, when you monitor them, it gives you an idea whether you are continuously improving in all three aspects or not. So, your structure, are you having the latest equipments available in the world? In the process, you see your standard operating procedures are up to date, modify them as per the new requirements, as per all the laws to be taken care of, statutory requirements and beyond, and then you go on adding newer things, modifying your services, and see to it that your customer, that's your patient, is delighted. The outcomes are in the form of reduction of the hospital acquired infections to a great extent, reduction in the mobility of the patients, the number of days the patient is staying in your hospital should reduce day by day, and the outcome in the form of cure. As far as possible, patients should be cured totally rather than any impairment remaining or disability remaining. So, and then prevent the disease occurring. So, preventive cure also one should look into by giving outreach services. Prevention is always better than cure. So, one has to sustain these improvements in such a way that we are improving continuously. So, then comes infection control team, which is also very important, because that is the main team which is going to look after to prevent hospital acquired infection. What are the thrust areas? One is development of effective surveillance system. One should have effective surveillance system to know what all things are occurring in the hospital, how many cases of newly acquired hospital acquired infections are occurring, what is the average length of stay of the patient, whether it is increasing because of some new infection he has got in the hospital while staying in the inpatient, that is in the ward or in the ICU. You develop various policies and procedures to reduce nosocomial infections. You have to develop the newer policies if required and the standard operating procedures in such a way that the hospital acquired infections should reduce day by day, and whereby the patient's morbidity and mortality should reduce, and the patient should be happier while going at the earlier stage. Maintenance of continuing education program for hospital personnel. As we know, the hospital acquired infection is occurring due to the one infected patient or the staff of the hospital himself being infected when he treats the other patient. This infection may cross transmit and goes to that patient. So one should prevent that, and that will be done only by continuing medical education given to your staff and patients by isolating the patients if they are having multi-drug resistant problems, by right kind of infection control procedures, by sterilization, by aseptic precautions. A person entering the ICU, he should never go with shoes. He should always use the sterile solution at the entrance on his hands. He should wear mask. If he is suffering from common cold also, he is not supposed to enter ICU. So having all these precautions, preventions to be done, only limited hours of visiting hours and minimum number of people going near the patient, these procedures one has to follow, and hence it should be displayed very well and then implemented to the utmost. So development of policies and procedures to reduce all possible ways of nosocomial infections. Your central sterile department should be well equipped and should be giving you all the indicators used to see to it that all the equipment that are supplied are 100% sterile. Say 99.99% of spores also are killed by your procedures. That has to be ensured by using the right kind of indicators. Then provide system for identification and reporting. So if somebody is suffering from this, there should be a data collection properly. So there should be a proper system developed, whom to report, how to go about it. The epidemiologist of the hospital can study this properly, analyze it, and then find out the right kind of thing to take care of in future. And so identification and reporting, then good hospital hygiene, very, very important. The housekeeping department should be very, very meticulous and scrupulous. Their procedures should be perfect. Standard operating procedures should be followed by each and every person. Cleanliness, the right kind of ventilation, using all aseptic liquids solutions and aseptic precautions while treating patients, while maintaining all the equipments. Each and every aspect one has to be looking after thoroughly well. So good hospital hygiene, and finally quality assurance of each and every aspect. When you take care of, then only hospital infection can reduce. So what are the various members? There are representatives from medicine, surgery, gynecology, pediatric, that is child specialist, pathology, microbiologist, very, very essential, administrative staff, the hospital administrator, nursing staff, microbiology, housekeeping, central sterile supply department, even pharmacy and operation theater staff. All these people should be taking part in infection control committee meetings. Hospital epidemiologist is a must if possible. Infection control officer is the secretary. Hospital administrator acts as a chairman. So all of these people should meet periodically, and in case of some excess number of people suffering from this kind of thing, they should meet more often, and they should take stock of what's happening, monitor it, and take the help of any experts needed from outside also to prevent nosocomial infection. What are the functions of infection control committee? One is, it determines methods of surveillance, how you are going to have the surveillance so that you know where all it is occurring, whether each and every case of nosocomial infection is being detected, properly recorded, What are the things you have done to prevent this? What are the things you have done to diagnose it early? And how you are going to go about it for future prevention also. So, determine methods of surveillance, lay down various criteria for reporting, whom to report, at the earliest you are supposed to report, and what all things to be done in after reporting also you should know, how the microbiological examination should be done, how the culture antibiotic sensitivity should be done, and immediate treatment should be started. Review occurrence of clusters of infections if there are clusters of infection occurring in particular areas. Suppose in one particular operation theater you see 3 or 4 cases of hospital acquired infection occurring, then you have to see to it that proper sterility of this operation theater has to be maintained. You have to take the swabs from wall, floor, all the equipments, operation theater table, the AC duct, wherever it is possible the organisms can be there, and examine them, find out which organisms are there and correlate it with what was the infection that has occurred in the patients, and then take the right precautions. You may close down that operation theater for a week or so and thoroughly fumigate, thoroughly wash it, whatever is required you are supposed to do. So, review the occurrence of cluster of infections, and if there are any trends, you do the trend study to find out whether the trend is increasing or decreasing in that particular location or not, or any location where you are seeing any changes in the trend. Review with medical audit committee for use of right antibiotics for this kind of hospital acquired infections. The right latest antibiotic, by having the right kind of culture antibiotic sensitivity test in right dosage with right mode of giving. If it is IV required, always give IV. Recommend equipment for sterilization. If you feel that some equipments are not giving sterilization 100%, then you may recommend the latest equipment, latest antiseptic solutions required. Review of cleaning agents that you are using in the hospital for cleaning the floors, for cleaning the beds, the furniture, the equipment. Even review your policy of immunization, whether all the people are immunized against injection TT, all the lab paramedical medical staff are immunized against hepatitis B or not, whether they are using the universal precautions or not. Isolate those patients who are likely to transmit the infection because of the highly vulnerable, the newer bugs or the antibiotic resistant bugs they are suffering from, or some of the communicable diseases they are suffering from, where isolation is a must. And do regular training program for all medical paramedical staff, even for community patients and relatives also. You regularly have the training programs done so that they come to know about how the infection is spreading and how you can prevent it, what precautions they are supposed to take when they enter. For example, if a patient is admitted and his son who has got common cold comes and meets him, that also is not right, because even common cold can spread through the air and it can affect the other patients in that ward also. So, once we are educating them, giving the training programs, it will help in preventing infection. Now, various international accreditations are available in the form of Joint Commission, International Joint Commission, Association of JECO, Hospital and Health Management, and in India it is mainly National Accreditation Board of Hospital and Health Management. The structure of this is Quality Council of India. We have got a separate Quality Council. There is National Accreditation Board for Hospitals and Healthcare Providers, and they have got certain standards for the structure, process and outcome. all those equipment should be there, the right kind of square feet should be there, the location, the area of each and everything, how much area should be given per bed, how much area should be given for laboratory, how much area should be given for CSSD based on the number of beds and all. They have got all the criteria laid down. So they have got technical committee which will tell you all the requirements. There is accreditation committee who is going to look after and observe this and find out if there are any lacuna, and there are secretarial, there is an appeals committee. If you are not said, if the NABH is not giving you the accreditation, then you can go to appeal committee who is going to review and then give you an advice how to get it. And there are panel of assessors and experts who have done the special course of NABH and who have got the qualified certificate with them, who are acting as assessors or experts, and they initially may guide you what all requirements you are supposed to fulfill, some of them, and some of them who are coming as assessors who will then assess you and then give you the certificate if they are satisfied with what you have